There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Before we get started with this episode of Benched with Bubba, I want to tell you I am stoked to be collaborating with Rotoballer this 2020 season with the Benched with Bubba podcast joining the Rotoballer Radio Network. Since 2013, Rotoballer has been grinding away providing millions of fantasy baseball players their fix for in-depth MLB analysis and player news. If you haven't heard, Rotoballer 2020 MLB Draft Kit is live, and all Benched with Bubba listeners can get 10% off Rotoballer's Draft Kit by using the discount code Bubba. Rotoballer is home to the number one fantasy pros accuracy ranker, Nick Mariano. Nick's 2020 rankings and projections are available as part of Rotoballer's draft kit, along with printable cheat sheets, draft sleepers, and busts. More than 300 2020 player outlooks and tons of in-season tools. All this fantasy baseball goodness from Rotoballer is available for 10% off with a discount code Bubba. Just go to rotoballer.com/Bubba and get your draft kit today. They have tons of great stuff, and you get premium with promo code Bubba, DFS, all the goodies. Use promo code Bubba, sign up at Rotoballer, get an extra 10% off with promo code Bubba. Now to tonight's episode of Benched with Bubba. Back everybody to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 292. Got a returning guest coming onto the show. Going to talk some of his recent work over at rotoballer.com. Some work on some pitching, maybe standouts, not standouts. Depends on how you look at things. Glass half full, glass half empty. Who knows? Some first 50 game stats, some pitchers from the National League facing the DH. Just some fun conversation in general. You can find him on Twitter at notburtreynolds, NT_burtreynolds. Nicholas Gott, how we doing, man?
I'm doing great, Bubba. Thanks for having me on.
No problem. Thanks for coming back on the show to chat it up a bit. It's always fun getting to catch up with you outside the Twitter streets. So that's always good stuff. Before we get started, I kind of mentioned Rotoballer and whatnot, but let everybody know what you got going on because it's way more than just a few articles and whatnot.
So I do a majority of my work at Rotoballer. I also do dynasty work on Pitcher List. That you know everyone's familiar with, especially after the amazing PitchCon that just wrapped up, which was fantastic. Right now my last few articles have been on an ERA lie detector series, just kind of seeing the ERA overachievers and underachievers by using a starting point of their Sierra scores, just to see the biggest gaps and then kind of go from there. And then after that, I have one more of those. Three of those are out. I have one more coming down the pipe. And then I have a couple of things on kind of the general effect of what a universal DH might look like as far as how it would affect different pitchers.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. That's kind of what got us talking the other day. And I obviously look at all the work over at Rotoballer, but seeing – that little series you have going on will be fun to chat about some names there, because
It's always interesting. We talk about it many times on this show. You talk about it with stuff you do. Is there's so many different ways to analyze players. There's so many ways to go about fantasy baseball. That's one reason why I always have different guests on, is it's fun to get their opinions on it, the work they do, the reason they have the beliefs they have, because that's one way to definitely do it. So it'll be interesting because it's some more important names than you think. Names people like a lot in the pitching world, so it's going to be fun to get your thoughts on that. Before we get to that, though, we have one bit of news that we have to talk about. It's not great news, which most baseball news these days isn't great, but Chris Archer, done for the season, which really stinks because there was high hopes coming into the year that he was going to change his pitch mix, that he was going back to the Tampa Bay days. Things were looking great, but he had quite the surgery, the Matt Harvey surgery, a surgery that many people have not bounced back from. Do you have any thoughts on Chris Archer? Because there's a good chance he'll be a free agent next year.
Yeah, he will be a free agent next year. I think the Pirates have like a $12 million option on him that they can buy out for $250,000.
Yep.
So I can't imagine they will be picking that up. I've made a lot of jokes at Chris Archer's expense over the years. So I wasn't very high on him this year. I thought there was going to be some bounce back, but a lot of my interest in him was just because his ADP is ridiculously low, given what kind of upside he has. And even when he's bad, he strikes out a lot of people. So there was that. But, the exit of Ray Sears and Pittsburgh Pirate for the Pirates had a lot of people excited that, you know, maybe Arch would stop being stubborn with his pitch mix and change things up a little bit. But with the thoracic outlet syndrome surgery, he's 31 years old. He's not going to pitch until 2021 with who knows which team. I don't know if we're ever going to see a good version of Archer again. He just came off a year with a over 5 ERA, and just that's how the baseball game goes. There's a lot of guys that have tantalizing talent that over and over don't quite live up to that talent. And Archer's one of those guys, and we just haven't seen a good Archer for a while. And I really think his lasting legacy now is going to be that he got traded for, the great trade escape that the Rays made, getting Glasnow and Meadows for him for essentially nothing. So, yeah, that's... I think that's probably his legacy going forward.
Yeah, it sucks. And the crazy part is it's not just Glasnow and Meadows. Shane Baz will be up soon, and that's just going to make it even worse and even bigger.
About Baz. He's the worst one in that trade, and he's kind of electric.
Yeah, he's kind of like he's not even like player to be named later. He's like still like a top 10 to 15 prospect that got dealt in the deal to just top it off. Yeah. So, It's wild. I know Matty Wood on Twitter was giving me a hard time. He's like, "Oh yeah, it's perfect. He'll take the $250,000. He'll be a free agent. He'll go sign with the Dodgers and resurrect his career." And I'm like, "Yeah, that's a typical Dodger fan telling me that. I get it." But what I would love
to see, will probably get him back.
That's what I would love to see. I told him I'd rather see the Rays get him back and then bring him back to the old Archer, like the way they kind of resurrected Morton a little bit and stuff. And that would be just amazing to just really put the salt in the wound of Pittsburgh. It'd be something special. But
don't trade with the Rays. Like everyone, just don't trade with them. Like they know something that you do not know. Don't trade with them. They're going to get over on you. As a St. Louis, living in St. Louis, I know this all too well. Like, don't trade with the Rays. They're getting over on you.
Yeah, the Rays and the Astros. As much as people might want to hate the Astros, it's one of those things. They have a just enormous wealth of talent, and if they're trading them, they know something you don't know. It's that simple. If they're picking that name out of the hat, there's a reason why. So just be very careful there.
Yeah, there's some fatal flaw that is hidden somewhere, and it won't come out until they come to your team.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Let's talk about your series here. We got three parts already out. You mentioned the fourth part's coming out soon. ERA lie detector finding 2019 overachievers with Sierra. First off, before we get into players, just for people wondering, because it's been a fun debate. I've had different guys break it down with different stats on here and why they do this, why they do that. You know, FIP, XFIP, Sierra, there's all these different indicators. What is it that makes you like Sierra?
It is So I'm a big fan of, you know, using all the tools in the tool belt, and I'll look at a lot of stats. I'll usually start with Sierra just because, and you know, it is, you know, FIP correlates very well to in season value, and you know, tells you how much of that ERA from that year, how much of it was, you know, true, as it were. And then XFIP and Sierra do a better job. Well, you know, they're not technically forward-looking projections. They're backward-looking evaluators. But they do the best job of, if you want to make guesses about their ERA next year. And it's not airtight by any means. Like, you can't just take someone's Sierra and plug it in for their ERA next year. But it speaks to the underlying skills more of a pitcher going forward and how it contributed to their success or lack of success that year. Slightly more predictive than XFIP. They look at different things. They kind of, you know, they mostly move in lockstep. There are going to be some differences though, but that's another reason to use multiple tools. It's, you know, if you see someone that Sierra likes a lot more than XFIP or vice versa, that gives you a starting point on what about this pitcher's skills are picking up that number. And what Sierra does is it's going to look mostly at K rate, walk rate, ground ball rate, and to a lesser extent, fly ball rate. And what it does differently than FIP and XFIP is that it weights those statistics a little bit more. It gives more credit to the high K pitcher. It gives more credit to the low walk pitcher. And same, you know, more credit to higher ground balls. So it's just, it's the interaction of those three, but it's also just kind of understanding why to strikeouts. High strikeout pitchers tend to allow less contact. It accounts for the snowball effect more of, like, walks is a really good one. Like, it doesn't, more walks don't hurt a low walk pitcher as much as a high walk pitcher, because the pitcher is less likely, if you have a low walk percentage, you're less likely to have players on base when you do allow a walk, and you're also less likely to allow another walk if you do walk someone. Therefore, less people on base, less of them will come around to score. And conversely, you know, a guy that allows a lot of walks, like, every subsequent, you know, he's more likely to walk the next batter and more likely for them to come around and score. So I like that weighting that it gives, and just it gives a little better, clearer picture of the total package of a pitcher's skills. But it's a jumping off point. Like, it's one of those things that, you know, I see a big gap between a Sierra and an ERA, and I want to know why. And that just gets me going. And then I end up writing 1,000 words on a guy.
Yeah. And that's what brings us to this whole topic, is the difference in your ERA and Sierra. And you got the top 25 pitcher ADPs in this article, and you do the differences between ERA, Sierra. You get the Ks, the walk percentages, the ground ball percentages, things you were just mentioning there that could have an impact on said stats. So you wrote about some guys, and I really like the names you picked. I kind of hinted at that earlier, because I'm not saying, like, everyone's in love with Zach Greinke, but there's a lot of people that really like Zach Greinke as this guy they think is going to be Mr. Reliable, low ERA, not going to crush you, put up innings, accumulator type guy that gets you going. Like you mentioned, in 2019, he was this SP4, finished 24 overall. That's a heck of a season, a phenomenal season. But is that, like, realistic? Probably not. But where he's going in NFBC, according to this, at this point in time, it's pick 63. What is it you saw with Zach Greinke that tells you that 2.93 ERA with the 3.96 Sierra is something to maybe keep an eye on?
Well, for one, it's, you know, this is his best year by far since 2015. And, you know, he had a career low walk rate. But his strikeout rate is, you know, middling. It was 23%. It was 23% the year before. You know, he had a big bump in 2017 of almost 27%, but the years before that, it was 20%, 23%. And it is, you know, and that's kind of a theme with a lot of these guys that I wrote about, is that it's really hard to provide consistent value, fantasy, like total fantasy value, when you run a, you know, par to below par strikeout rate. And a lot of Greinke's value was wrapped up in his 18 wins and his 2.93 ERA. And I don't think that, you know, you look at his evaluators from years past, and the 2.93 ERA is kind of, it's a big gap between a 3.96 Sierra, and he had a 3.74 XFIP. You look at 2018, they're more like, they're a little bit closer. He had a 3.21 ERA at a 3.44 XFIP, a 3.60 Sierra. You know, he still outperformed those evaluators, but it's a little bit closer. And the year before that, it was a little bit closer. And his Sierra just keeps creeping up, and his ERA was creeping up until last year. And, you know, if Zach Greinke has, you know, I put in the article that, you know, with his K rate and his, you know, projected wins by, you know, most of the popular systems and his kind of substandard K rate, he feels a lot more like Eduardo Rodriguez than a, you know, top 50, top 60 pick. And that, I mean, his ADP is, you know, 68, but I don't know about you, but especially since the pandemic began and pitchers have went even higher, like, I have seen Zach Greinke go really, really early. And he is like, I have him ranked pretty low on Rotobar. Like, I have a aggressive ranking, as it were, past pick 100. But I think it's more likely that he lands in the, like, overall, like, 80th, 90th value. But he's 36 years old. And he, you know, his fastball tops out at, you know, 89-90. And he just finished putting up his lowest home run per nine and lowest home run fly ball percent of his career in, you know, the biggest offensive year of the season. I still like him for a lot of wins. The ratios I think will be okay. I'm not counting on them to be great again. And if they're not great again, and he puts up the same like 23% K rate that we're probably going to get, and if he even takes a little dip in wins, then suddenly his value sinks greatly. And with, you know, with the age, with the velocity, it's just he. I'm not saying he's going to fall off a cliff. I actually really like Greinke. I love crafty pitchers. And just as a baseball thinker, I really like Greinke. I always have. But one of these years, that's the 89 mile per hour heater is going to catch up to him. And I don't want to be the one left holding the bag. And I'm not saying that's going to be this year, but I think there's a better chance than usual that it is.
Yeah, that's the hard part with him, because I'm with you. I've grown to like Greinke for craftiness, the just reliability, to like the ratios, things along those lines that can make you take gambles elsewhere. But the age racking up, you know, you even showed his year by years, and they were kind of going in the right direction than he has last year. The last time he outperformed his Sierra FIPS, XFIPS as much like this was 2015. He went from a 1.6 ERA to a 4.37 in 2016. I'm not saying it's going to jump like that, but you know what I'm saying? Like, there's a big room for questions there. I do like what he's doing. If I got to play devil's advocate somewhat, I like the fact that he's with the Astros. I think that's going to help a ton. I also like the fact, if they do the three divisions and he's stuck in the West, that's a tremendous boost. So that can make things interesting. And obviously, when you're writing about your article, you're not factoring those in, because you shouldn't be factoring those in. But that would be one argument I could see going, okay, I could see in a shortened season where blowups can hurt you more, Greinke in the West facing those teams could be worth a little bit. Now, is he worth ADP where he's 61 since April 1st in an FBC? I don't know. That's where it gets interesting. Like, Nick, for you, going right before Greinke's Tyler Glasnow, would you rather have Greinke or Glasnow?
Glass now.
Okay, so then right. What about Greinke or Nola?
Ooh,
Nola's going that, 5 picks earlier.
That is, I'm still taking Nola, but I am betting more on the upside of Nola. But I don't think I have any shares of Nola. I don't think I plan on having any. I think he's an extreme guy. I think the range of his results this year could be extreme. And like you said, Greinke, there's a certain level of comfort in the fact that he is going to pitch a lot of innings. He is going to go deep into games, and playing with what's presumed to be one of baseball's best offenses, he's going to be in line for a lot of wins, you would think. So even if the ERA does rise, the wins can help balance that out some. So, yeah, I'd still take Nola, but I don't really like either one of those.
Yeah, like in reality, we know 2.93 is not happening, but if we can get like a 3.4 or 3.5, you're still pretty happy. The bat has him for 3.88, ATC 3.78 ERAs. Steamer though 4.26, so they're all expecting quite a hike. The last would you rather, we went two guys over him. We'll go below him now. Zach Greinke at 61 or Berrios at 74.
Oh, Zach Greinke, because I'm a known Berrios hater. So,
all right, let's go with a little more upside here. Greinke at 61 or Woodruff at 77.
Oh, Woodruff. Okay. Yeah, I figured you were going there. Woodruff guy too. So yeah, that's an easy one for me.
All right, let's move on to the next guy that you have here, and this is another fun one because Sonny Gray had a tremendous season in Cincinnati. We know the stories. In New York, you know, Saris wrote about him greatly, the slider issues, all that stuff. Goes to Cincinnati. They bring in his former pitching coach. He finds a new groove. There's lots of things you can look at in his stats and kind of, you know, his X stats and all these things that kind of make you think maybe not. But at the same time, he was pretty darn good. But like you did when you broke down his Sierra and all these other stats, it kind of makes you scratch your head a little bit. So what you got on Sonny Gray?
Yeah, really interesting case that the Saris article that you mentioned that Eno wrote last spring is really, really good and is very enlightening about just, you know, he had a 4.9 ERA with the Yankees and just numerous clashes. They did not care for each other very much. And the Saris interview is very enlightening. Like they were wanting him to throw his slider like Tanaka. They wanted him to throw it in the zone to get swings and misses, but also to get strikes. And to his credit, Gray was pretty forthcoming. He's like, I can't control my slider very well. My slider is the best when it's a big sweeper out of the zone. And you know, I put some heat maps in my article, and it's really easy to see, you know, his slider, you know, sitting in the zone while he's with the Yankees, and it's a completely different pitch. Mm-hmm. When he's with the Reds, and it was the slider, but it was also his curveball. He talked about how, you know, even going back to college, his college coach kind of put the kibosh on the slider for a while because it, the way he was throwing it was affecting the shape of his curveball and making it a lot worse. And, you know, you see the same difference between his tenure, you know, short tenure with the Yankees and then going to the Reds last year. I like, you know, he made a giant jump in K rate. He went from the highest he had had before last year was a 22.6% K rate. He ended up, you know, near 30% with the Reds. And really my problem with Gray is his price. You know, he's got a 98 ADP, and I think he could return that value. I think he was going by the Fangraphs auction calculator. I think he ended up player 69 in last year, but that was like the best version of Gray we had seen with, a 29% K rate and a 2.87 ERA. And he still just snuck in the top 70. And you know, if I'm in a draft and he slips to like, you know, 110, 120, like, yeah, that's kind of where I've been attacking pitchers anyway in drafts. And if he drops like that, then yeah, he'll end up on my teams. It seems like if you're drafting him there, you're betting for the best case scenario again. And I'm not going to bet on that, I don't think.
Yeah, his price tag is quite interesting. And even if he, you know, you look at the bat streamer, all of them, he's going to drop a little bit, but still, he's still in like the high three ERAs, which you can handle in the live ball era. You can handle that because I'm under the impression that there'll probably be a bouncy ball again this year. Keep the eyes on the TV whenever it comes back. So I could see that foreshadowing happening again. He's going around pick 95-ish currently in NFBC. So that's like 35 picks almost after Greinke. Would you rather Gray or Greinke?
They are very even. A lot of that would probably be dependent on the pitchers I had had before. Just like I do think that Greinke is a bit safer, but for the upside, I'd probably take Gray. Yeah. I don't know if he's going to have a 29% K rate again. I think the projection systems you mentioned, I think they all have him for around a 25%. So they believe in part of the change from last year. They're not knocking him back down to the 21, 22% that he was running before. I would rather take the upside of him over Greinke. I know what I'm getting with Greinke. Like and if I don't get a bunch of wins from him, then I think I'm getting a very poor return on my money if I get Greinke.
That's very true. I know you like upside. So Sonny Gray at 95 or Lizardo at 88?
Lizardo.
Yeah, you're on the train.
Yeah, it's like Lizardo's another guy that I haven't cared much for his ever rising price. I liked him a lot more in December and January than I do now. And it seems like drafts, for the past few months, it's with a heavier emphasis on pitching. There's always someone in your draft that's going to want themselves some Lizardo. And
yep, I'll never have him.
Yeah. I'm pretty positive I don't have any of him. I love the stuff. I love the like dynasty Lizardo. Oh yeah. All day. But a rookie pitcher in a bizarro year pitching for the bizarro A's, that's a lot of weight to put on, that high of a pick. And there's just a lot of things that can go wrong there.
Yeah, that's a lot of bizarro. So that's tough to figure out there. The last one, another guy with the upside, another member of the A's. You got Sonny Gray at 95. You got Frankie Montas at 99. And this is where you kind of realize, I mentioned Lizardo, I mentioned Montas. You got some closers around him. That's why it's tough to take Gray right here, right?
Oh yeah, I'm taking Montas. Yeah. I really like Montas a lot. The addition of the split finger has turned him into a devastating pitcher. And there's worry, of course. You're like, yeah, he got suspended. 80 game suspension for PEDs. Like, he only had, I think 96 innings last year. But the PEDs didn't give him a good splitter. Like, the splitter gave him a good splitter.
Yep.
And, he's got high 90s. He already had a nasty slider that he throws like 87 and 90. And now he's got that splitty that he also throws about 87. It tunnels incredibly well to left-handers and right-handers. I put some of those pitch tracking maps in when I wrote about them, and also some pitch overlays from Pitching Ninja, and you see how hard it must be to face him, because you look at the decision point, he throws a four seam, a two seam, and then the slider and the split finger. And at the decision point, the path of the ball where hitters have to decide, those guys are all right in line, and you have to decide whether or not you're getting one of the breaking pitches or you're getting high 90s heat. That's tough enough already that they have a 12-13 mile spread between them. And then if you decide that it's not the fastball, then you have to decide if it's going to be the slider diving out or the split finger going straight down. And they are just three pitches that work really, really well together. And I think this is likely the last year you can get a good price on Montas. So he's another guy that unfortunately there's often going to be a person in like, you need to commit to Montas early. You can't, mm-hmm. you can't wait on him because there's probably someone in your draft that has the same thinking that you do. So yep. you might have to pay higher than his draft price, but I think the upside is really, really high.
Yeah. Big Montas fan. I echo everything you said. That splitter changed everything. It was tremendous. And with the way we're going to see pitching move up once we get a season, Montas's ADP is going to skyrocket. So that'll be a fun one to keep an eye on. The last guy you have here in this part one of your article, fun name because Rob Silver's been talking a lot about him when it comes to DHs. But this is something, you know, 2.6 ERA for Mike Soroka last year with a 4.28 Sierra. Kind of a big difference. What is it you saw with Mike Soroka?
Oh, man, poor Mike Soroka. It seems like every time I talk in a podcast or write an article about not believing in something, poor Mike Soroka comes to the forefront. Going back to what we talked about Greinke, it is really hard when you have a substandard K rate to keep up your value if you don't keep everything else in line. And he's got barely a 20% K rate. And he mostly throws, his main pitch, he's got a really good two seam. It has like a 64% ground ball rate. He survives on that. He doesn't have a lot of swing and miss pitches. In the article I posted from Alex Chamberlain's Pitts leaderboard, he collates a lot of StatCast data and it's amazing. And he also gives the option to do some rolling graphs on things. And I put up the one of his WOBA against the two seam. And it's just a constant little climb up as the season goes on. And there, he survived on, he got all of his fantasy earnings, basically with the ERA, nothing out of strikeouts. And you dig even a little more into like his game by game stats. He was really good against really bad teams. He had a 1.30 ERA in 9 starts against Miami, Detroit, San Diego, San Francisco, and Cincinnati, who were all bottom 5 offenses. Don't have it written down here, but I think off the top of my head, I think all his other starts, he had like a 4.1 ERA. That's what pitchers do. You make hay against, when you can, against the bad teams. But a 20.3% K rate, only Jeff Samardzija, John Means, and Mike Fiers had a lower one out of the top 60 pitchers. And only Aaron Savale, Dakota Hudson, and Zach Davies had a bigger gap between their ERA and Sierra. Like, this is warning flag after warning flag after warning flag. And, you mentioned Rob Silver talking about the Ks, and I was in on that too. And he got a lot of those strikeouts against pitchers. So his K rate was already really poor. And if you take out the pitcher strikeouts, his K rate drops to like 17.3% or something. Wow. And if you're going to strike out 17% of people, like, you better have a shiny ERA and you better get a whole mess of wins or you're going to be a disaster. And he pitches deep in the game. He did a good job at that. He averaged 6 innings per start, which was the 24th highest out of, qualified starters. Not bad. And the Atlanta Braves are expected to have a really good offense. So I'm sure he'll be in line with his fair share of wins, but every indicator points to that ERA jumping way up. And unless he has some secret strikeout pitch in his pocket, like, he's stolen Frankie Montas' splitter, or he has something that's going to jump that K rate, I find it very hard to believe that he's going to return his value.
Yeah, that strikeout rate resembles the KBO, it sounds like. So that's not good. Not good at all. Lots of contact. When you become a two true outcome pitcher, that's not good. So,
yeah, not great.
No, like so he played a lot of smoke and mirrors there. Like you said, he did what you're supposed to do as a pitcher. That's part of the deal. He's 22 years old. He could definitely change things. That's possible. But it's a bit risky where he's going. He's going right behind Frankie Montas. He's going around a guy like Corey Kluber. I might just pass on both. So it's a interesting spot in the draft. He's going right. I just kind of overlook Soroka and I just move on. Like I'd rather have his teammate Max Fried. That's
oh
where,
yeah, all
that's
day.
Where I live in life. Like I couldn't understand it. I think most of the world now is on team Max Fried. I think I'm pretty confident on that. But you know, back in January, February, it was more Soroka than Fried world. It was very interesting. So I think that has definitely shifted though. Let's go to your second article on this, and you use ERA and Sierra again, but this is more like a glass half full situation where we talk about pitchers in the top, you know, 300, but you talk about 20 of them or so in this chart you have here who had a lower Sierra than ERA. So positive in the other direction, chance to maybe buy low or get a rebound or all these little things. And one of them is our Twitch man himself who he don't want the Rona, boys. He don't want the Rona. And that is Blake Snell. Who he's coming off of an injury-riddled season after a Cy Young season. We know the stuff is good, but it was definitely a very up-and-down year last year in 2020. What did you look at going at with Snell that got your attention to, we need to buy back in on this guy?
Yeah, so, you know, like you said, this was one of those really good instances of the gap between Sierra and ERA just served as a great jumping point. To you know, take a closer eye of was Blake Snell really that bad? And I came away from it thinking that he was not that as bad as we thought he was. I think he was hurt, and he has elbow surgery in late July, missed most of the rest of the season. Comes back at the end, pitches out of the a couple innings here and there out of the bullpen. But if you look at he didn't. Go under a knife until late July, but just looking at the numbers, it seems very, very clear that he was hurt in May and hurt towards the end of May. You look at his total games, earned runs per game. He had he had 20 starts, 14 of them he gave up 0 to 2 earned runs. He gave up three earned runs twice, didn't give up 4 earned runs. He gave up 5 or more earned runs in 5 starts. And you dig a little deeper and you see that Blake Snell had a really, really bad June. 25 earned runs in 23 innings, 6 starts, a 9.64 ERA. And so it's like, okay, he was hurt in July. He was horrible in June. He was really, really good in April and May. He had a higher, his K rate was up by a couple points from the year before when he won the Cy Young, and his ratios were up, but that's because he had a ridiculous ERA in 2018 that he probably didn't deserve quite all of it, looking at his ERA evaluators. And you dig a little bit more and you see that he dramatically changed his pitch mix after May. He went from his main breaking ball against right-handers is curveball. In April and May, he threw it 31% of the time, 161 average against it, a 49.3% K rate. And then magically in June and July, it dropped to a 20.8% usage. The slider is his main pitch against left-handed batters. 39% in April and May, had a 0% average, a 36.4% K rate. It drops 15 points to 25.4 usage in June and July. And his fastball rates to both sides of the plate jumped way up. Right-handers went from 40% to 55%. Left-handers, it went from 41% to 58%. Why? Why would Blake Snell, former Cy Young winner, pitching on one of the most data-driven teams in baseball, who is destroying right-handers and left-handers with his curve and slider, suddenly drop their usage rates, even though they have been killing, and switch to more fastballs? at the same time,
gotta be an injury
slowly ticking down. Like that is just the that's the trifecta of, hey, this guy's been pitching hurt, and you know he had, you know, the surgery was to remove loose bodies, you know, the very generic surgery. But I think it's pretty clear that he was hurting for a long time before July 21st when he had the surgery. And just going by how much he changed his pitch mix, you know, moving from, you know, the curve and sliders that are going to put more stress on an elbow to more fastballs and getting much worse results, but still sticking with the pitch mix. Like that tells me that the guy was just pitching hurt. And the numbers from April and May tell me he was kind of the same pitcher he was in 2018, but had a better K rate. So it's just, it's one of those things that just kind of seems obvious to me that, you know, pitchers don't always tell you when they're hurt. And he was pitching through some things. And so I kind of throw that June and July performance out the window, because, like, you know, Blake Snell's not going to give up, you know, 25 earned runs in 23 innings is kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, looking at the charts and the stats you mentioned, but looking at them on your article, it's like a big eye opener of like, oh my, like this wasn't just like a minor pitch mix change. He literally, like, you see the different rolling graphs, you see the heat maps and everything of where he's locating pitches. It's quite the change, and there's only one thing that should signal that kind of change. Like you said, it's an injury, and then he went and had surgery in July, so he probably pitched through it like a while, like you said, and it definitely shows in the stats and all the other good stuff. So that's a very interesting find, a very good find, a very strong find that I have not dug too deep into outside of perusing the article before, but listening to you break it down and look at it some more, it's very, very eye-opening. Do you have any concerns with this shoulder injury that he was kind of battling in spring?
Yeah. Like that's my one worry with Snell. You know, we heard it, you know, post pandemic stuff, you know, post spring training shutdown, you know, at first the news came out that, you know, Blake Snell was throwing three times a week and he was doing fine and that's great. And then a couple weeks ago, we hear that he's not throwing right now. And I don't trust any injury news that is coming out from, you know, the little injury news we get from people. I'll take the good news, like so-and-so is pitching regularly, so-and-so is fine. I don't like the radio silence on guys. And so that's my one concern with him is I think he is a high-risk play, not in performance necessarily, but just in – will he have, you know, in a shortened season, will he have a, you know, quote, season ending injury because he goes out for 10 weeks or whatever. And yeah, so that's my worry.
He concerns me a bit because, yeah, I wanted to buy back in. A lot of people want to buy back in. He gets hurt. His ADP drops a bit. It's been on the climb back towards the end with some of this good news, but it's like you say, you hear Griffin Canning, you hear Shohei Ohtani, these other guys are throwing bullpens, they're throwing off the mound. We're seeing footage, guys hitting or bouncing back like Eugenio Suarez and some of these other guys. With Blake Snell, we see him on Twitch. He talks about how he's preparing for next season, and then he slips up and goes, well, I'm still getting ready for this season. But it's like you almost want to say, wouldn't you have led with, hey, I'm ready for this season if we're going to play it? So that kind of concerned me a little bit. Like, are you throwing? Yeah. Are you not throwing? Like, what are you doing here, dude? Like, I know you're not going to be able to go throw 100 pitches tomorrow, but – are you staying loose? Are you keeping the bullets in the gun ready to go? Like, what are you doing here? So that's kind of an interesting way to look at it. But he's got that massive upside if he's healthy, but there is a risk. So when you're looking at coming into these drafts here, going right before him is Luis Castillo. Do you go Castillo or Snell?
Snell. Yeah.
Snell or Kershaw?
Snell.
Snell or Clevinger?
Oh, man, I think I'm going to go Snell, but this is really close. Like, even just, you know, in a vacuum without any injury concerns, I had them really close anyway. And, you know, even though, you know, Clevinger didn't have the injury, you know, the late injury anyway, that Snell did, but he had that early one and that followed a, you know, a big velocity boost. And I worry about him as well. Probably not as much as Snell on the injury front, but I like Snell's upside a little more, particularly in the wins.
That's like 17 picks apart. So that's a big jump. That's another round in the 15 teamer. Snell or Bieber?
Man, I think I've come around on. I think I've come around on Bieber.
I'm coming around on Bieber too. It's crazy. It's ridiculous.
Man, it's taken a while, but yeah, I think I will take Bieber because if there wasn't an injury concern with Snell, I would take him. But man, Bieber, he's got some sweet control, and he's proven that he can pitch a lot of innings. And I like the way Cleveland develops their pitchers anyway, and I think Bieber has a very safe floor. So, yeah, I'll go Bieber.
Last one for you. Those guys are all going ahead of him, going six picks behind him. Would you rather have Snell or Lucas Giolito?
Snell. I think that's mostly just because I'm not a Giolito. I'm really glad that he was so good last year because it used to bum me out all the crap that he took for the busted prospects. I'm really happy that he turned his career around in a hurry. I'll take Snell, but Snell, I'm drafting him and I'm keeping my fingers crossed because if he is on the field for every game, or makes it one of his starts, then performance, I'll definitely take Snell. But I guess I'll eat the risk of getting the dreaded bottom line of Blake Snell to undergo Tommy John surgery. So
definitely a possibility. The next guy you had up here is a guy that I'm trying to draft everywhere. But watching his ADP since like January, everyone is trying to draft Yu Darvish everywhere. It started out people not believing that his second half run was as good as it was, which was just insane. Like not walking anybody and striking out people. Looks like the Yu Darvish we grew and loved for a while. And I believed because he made changes. He made the pitch mix changes. He flat out said he didn't feel right. He looked at some things and he tweaked some things and he feels good again. And boom, he just went on this tear. And there's a lot to be said about that. Obviously, you did the actual work on that to enunciate it and talk about it better. But I'm a big believer in Darvish. What is it you found to potentially be a believer in Darvish?
Oh, man. You mentioned it. Like, I think people know he had a good second half. I don't think they understand how good of a second half he had. Mm-hmm. A 5 ERA in the first half, 2.76 in the second half. Okay, fine. A 26% K rate in the first half, a 37.8% K rate in the second half. You can even excuse that away and say Yu Darvish has pitches, like he can go on crazy strikeout runs. But he had an 11.7% walk rate in the first half and a 2.2% walk rate in the second half, with for a 35.6% K minus walk. That is insane. That is the best. That half is the best version of Darvish we've ever seen. It has all the strikeout love that we've always seen out of him, but that walk rate is ridiculous. His first couple of years he came over, he was like a 9-10% guy, but he's kind of settled into a 7-8% guy over these past few years. And so putting up those numbers was, very eye-opening, especially when you compare, like, talking about his, 35.6% K minus walk rate. That was third in the second half. First was Gerrit Cole. Second was Verlander. Third was Darvish. Fourth was Giolito, but it was also like 7 points behind Darvish. Like there was a clear tier of guys there. And fifth was, Jacob deGrom. So he also had, the much better Sierra. We looked at the difference between ERA and Sierra for the entire year, but looking at just the second half, he had a 2.76 ERA, but a 2.45 Sierra and a 2.37 XFIP and a 2.83 FIP.
Still very, very good.
Yeah, that 2.76 ERA was for real. And, you know, you look at that and, you know, once again, a starting point just to kind of see how sustainable it is. And he really focused down on his pitch mix in the second half. And he also kind of, that's what I got into, is just that all his pitches were, he was allowing fewer walks on all of them. Like he didn't just lean on, you know, his, you know, he increased his cutter usage.
He trusted everything. It was all working.
Yeah, it was just all working. And, you know, I got into just some of his release points on his four seam and his cutter and his slider, which were his three main pitches in the first and second half, or in the second half. And he tightened up his release point. He became a lot more consistent. You know, I love release point graphs. And, you know, you see the big blob of the first half move down to a tinier little circle in the second half. And it, you know, it proved it in his location. And when you can trust where you're going to be able to locate your pitches, things get a lot better. And he went from, like, you know, taking a look at his cutter in the first half, most of his pitches were sitting dead red at, you know, thigh high. And he go to the second half, and now they're going away to right-handers, like right on the edge of the plate, and still thigh high, but still getting a lot more, a lot worse contact. And his four seamer, same thing. It was so bad in the first half. It had a 12.42 OPS against it in the first half with a 18.5% walk rate. And it just got crushed. And, you know, you go to the heat map and it's, he was pumping them in dead red, or he was wild around the plate and things got squeezed in the second half. You can just tell he was locating better. And then once again, same story on the slider. Like the slider went from right in the middle of the plate to more at the top of the zone. He was using it, you know, and I used a series of GIFs to kind of illustrate this in a at bat against Paul Goldschmidt in the second half. And he was using his slider a lot more early in counts to steal strikes. And he made Paul Goldschmidt look pretty foolish on four pitches by getting a slider and then getting him with a cutter moved in on him, and then a four seamer that went out on him, and he had no chance. And his location had tightened up so much. And Darvish is another one. You know, we talked about Greinke earlier. I really like Darvish. I've always liked him. I like guys that are very open about their process, both in their successes and their failures. And Darvish very much is like that. I think as he's gotten older, he has less tinkering with trying to throw, you know, 14 pitches, and more focusing on what works and when it works. And I think that's the Darvish we saw. We saw just tighter control across the board with his pitches and ridiculous results. And if you Darvish, he had a 2.2 walk rate. His, you know, you look at his X stats, his X walk percent was like 4.4%. So it's like, I'm not expecting a 2% walk rate again. But if Yu Darvish is going to start walking only 4 or 5% of his batters and still keeping the K rate, like, that is deadly. And I like that a lot.
Yeah, it's very, very nice. It goes to show that it's a long season, usually, obviously not this year. But when they're doing these side sessions, you know, they say pitching's an art. These guys like are always tinkering with things. They know when things don't feel right. They're watching video too. So they're sitting there. That's the whole job of the pitching coach and these other guys. They're sitting there trying to figure out the new release points, this, that, and the other. Like, as much as people like don't like Trevor Bauer, he talks about that stuff all the time. Like, you see his videos. He's tweaking where he's throwing it from, the spin here, how he's gripping it. These guys are all doing that stuff in one way or another. They just don't talk about it as much as a Trevor Bauer. But this is happening all the time until they find that sweet spot, just like Darvish did. Like you explained, like I talked about, I remember him saying he was off. He tweaked something and he felt great. And then you could just see it just take off from there. And he was lights out good. And I think this is a real thing that he can continue doing going forward. Now, is he going to have a 2.2 walk percentage and a 36% K rate or K to walk rate? Probably not. Let's not get crazy here. But could he have a 4-5% walk rate and like a 33% strikeout rate? Sure. Like very, very possible. And that is elite stuff. Absolutely ridiculous stuff. So he's getting drafted. I'm a huge fan of it. And I'm going to ask you a question, a little kind of curveball from where we're talking here. But, you know, you've used these pitch mix, you know, rolling graphs. We've talked about the release point blots you have there, the heat maps that you're using, and all these different things that kind of indicate the difference in what's going on. When you're, you know, out season like we're doing now, it's easy to kind of see those things. When you're in season, how do you, like, what sample size do you feel comfortable going, okay, this is really, like, with Blake Snell all of a sudden throwing a fastball, how many starts do you need to see that? With Yu Darvish's, you know, his release point change, how many starts do you need to see, like, this is what's happening to buy in, so, like, maybe you can jump ahead of people and grabbing these kind of players?
I think you need more than a few. Things like this is tougher during season, just because from game to game, pitch mixes can vary quite a bit just according to what lineup they're facing. So those things don't always jump out. But, you know, you start approaching 10 starts and something is dramatically different, you know, even over 5 and whatnot, then yeah, you can start looking at, are these changes or are these just, you know, a matter of small samples against, you know, a team with a bunch of left-handers or whatever. I think that there's other things like injury indicators, like with Snell, that's easier just because, you know, if I had looked at, and I didn't, but if I had looked at Snell in, you know, after that disastrous June and had seen, oh, his velo was slowly rising in April and May and then slowly dropping, and his fastball and breaking pitch usage kind of flipped on their heads. When there's big flags like that, I don't think it takes, you know, too long, but still it's like, it really depends on who they're pitching against. And, mm-hmm. you know, Snell could have, you know, he could have not been hurt and just could have had went away from his slider and curveball because he was facing, you know, he went through a 4-game stretch where he was facing some teams that were really bad against fastballs. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot harder in season, but yeah, so I'll need more than a handful of games to kind of make a determination on, okay, something has changed.
No, I'm with you. That's why I wanted to ask. Cause like in with hitting, we can kind of, you can feel a little more comfortable with like 2 weeks, 3 weeks or whatever, but mm-hmm. that's still, you know, 14, 20 games, give or take, to get that kind of sample size for a pitcher. You're like a quarter of a season, third of a season, maybe half a season. And by then you're hurting somewhere. So it's interesting because you dig way deeper into pitching than I do. I keep trying to get better at pitching, but the stuff you, like the Nick Pollocks, all you guys that are like spores that are hardcore into this kind of analysis on pitchers, I was wondering what your sweet spot was. So it's good to, it makes me feel a little better. I'm not alone thinking you can't just pull the trigger that quickly.
Yeah.
So that's good. Let's go to your third part in this one. We'll go back to the glass half empty scenario, guys that overachieved. And, you know, personally, this first one makes me chuckle a little bit because I've never been the biggest Jack Flaherty fan. I will be the first to admit what he did last year, especially in the second half, was remarkable. Watching him pitch in his first career playoff game against the Braves was outstanding. Most young kids would have choked in that situation, and he was great. Absolutely amazing. And he didn't have his best stuff that day, and he still pitched phenomenal. So he's a great pitcher. I don't knock that at all. But the expectations around the fantasy world, it's hard for me to buy in, given it's always been hard for me to buy into Shane Bieber. We just talked about, and I've talked about like 4 straight episodes now, how all of a sudden I'm buying into Shane Bieber because I've been convinced. Maybe Jack Flaherty is the case. I've talked to like STL Cup of Joe and some Cardinals guys. You're a Cardinals guy. And you guys are all kind of skeptical on Flaherty. Why don't you explain why you're a little skeptical? And it might just be price because he's the 6th pitcher off the board too.
Yeah, that's pretty much where my skepticism mostly begins and ends is with price and that his ridiculous ADP. Like, I hate that. I would really like if his ADP dropped back into the 30-40 range.
Would you rather Blake Snell or Jack Flaherty?
Jack Flaherty.
Okay, I had to see.
Just assume my answer is going to be Jack Flaherty until you get to Walker Buehler. So,
gotcha.
His second half was so insane with a 0.91 ERA and a 0.76 WHIP. I think it's really easy to not buy into any sort of repeat of that, because you're like, it can't be that good again. It won't be that good again. But with Flaherty, it is. It's not just if this was his first good year, where we had seen some big changes, I would be more hesitant to buy in. But he kind of had he had a mini breakout in 2018 too. And I took a look at just his, his halves by half, like first, second half of 18, first, second half of 2019. And for one, he's had slowly increasing velocity. That is always a good indication when that thing keeps ticking up, and it's ticked up from every half over the past 2 years. For another is like just speaking to the development of a young pitcher. In 2018, he had a 28% K rate in the first half, jumped up 3 points to 31 in the second half, but his walk rate also made a big jump, went from 7.6% to 11.4%. And then in that first half, disastrous half of 2019, 4.64 ERA, his K rate was back down to 26.4%. And that jumped up to 33.9% for the second half. But his walk rate started off at 7.9%, which was back to the good walk rate of the first half of 2018. And his K rate jumped in the second half, but his walk rate didn't. It dropped by a point and a half, 6.3%. So that's another little, that's another little indicator I like, along with the increased velocity. And then also his pitch mix changed quite a bit. He has a nasty slider. It's got 23.3% swing strike rate that was fifth highest among qualified starters, a 40.6% K rate that was 12th. It average exit velocity of 82 miles per hour. It was third lowest, 2.6% solid contact, sixth lowest. Like, people can't hit the slider. When they hit the slider, they don't hit it very well. And he started dropping his four seam in the second half, replacing it with more sliders, more of his two seamers. And then the other thing that I've talked about before, he's a right-handed pitcher. You need an extra weapon against left-handed batters. And he has a really good curveball, in my opinion, that was not very good in the first half. He throws it about 20% to left-handers versus just 5% against right-handers. And in the first half, it had a 4.11 Wobon contact, an 11.1% barrel rate, and only a 6.7% swinging strike. He threw it, I put up the heat maps. He was throwing that curveball in the first half, letter high and just a little bit away from left-handers. And in the second half, again, the release point changed a little bit. It tightened up. He raised it up a little bit. He brought it in just a little bit on the horizontal plane. Will Bacon goes from 4.11 to 2.61. Barrel goes from 11% to 0%. Swinging strike goes from 6.7% to 15.1%. And instead of going letter high and away, it's just buckling people at the knees. And he can use it for swinging strikes. He can use it to get called strikes. And, the movement tightened up. It wasn't much of a 12 to 6. And he got back to, like, I can get left-handers back out again. I wish he would use it more against right-handers, to be honest. But just when you're looking at, Jeff Zimmerman is much smarter than me and probably everyone listening. he talks about like the keystones, the markers that you're looking at for a pitcher breakout, and increased velocity, an increasing K rate, lowering walk rate, and a change in pitch mix, for the better. And when you get a pitcher that is had a bunch of success and he's, getting high marks in all those areas, it's a lot easier to believe. And I'm always riding that Flaherty hype train. But I, like I said, the only thing I don't like about it is that price. I have Flaherty on a whole bunch of teams, but they're also teams that I took that I had him in earlier. Now it's hard. I've been in a couple drafts that he's been taken before Buehler. He gets taken into teens. I'm not going to do that because I'm not an absolute crazy person. I have him I have the top tier pitchers, with Cole and DeGrom, Verlander, Scherzer, and then kind of Walker Buehler in his own little mini tier. And then Flaherty, Snell, Clevinger, Bieber, those type guys, grouped a little closer together. But I have Flaherty comfortable, but that draft price is brutal. You have to believe. That's kind of the thing. I mean, I still believe, but man, you got to pull the trigger on him in the second round if you want him.
Yeah, no, you have to really kind of have some conviction to get Jack Flaherty, because I'm with you. The stuff watching him was outstanding. I'm kind of with you. That draft price, just I can't do it. And that was one of the things that scared me off of Bieber. Bieber had some other things that scared me. You way too much of the plate. That scares me a lot. But with Flaherty, he's filthy. He's darn filthy. There's no doubt about that. He's got one heck of a Twitter game. So not going to
fall. Yeah, he's got some red ass in him too. And I always like that in my pitchers, though.
Yeah. No, there's no backing down with Jack Flaherty. So I'm a big fan of that. You want to hit one 420 feet? Get ready for your ear hole. I'm a big fan of that kind of stuff. Bring it. That's old school baseball. I'm a fan of that. But a couple more guys here. We talked Frankie Montas earlier. We kind of talked Jose Berríos earlier. Got any quick hitters on Jose Berríos, who is one of the big differential guys?
Man, I just I don't understand. Jose Berríos is what Jose Berríos is. We 2017, starting pitcher 33. 2018, starting pitcher 35. 2019, starting pitcher 35. But he's being taken as, around an 80 ADP as starting pitcher 21.
Yep.
And I don't understand why. The projection systems, agree with me. They see him as a guy that's going to have a 4 ERA and a whip over 1-2. 1-2-4 for ATC and 1-2-9 for Steamer. And I honestly don't get it. I think the K rate kind of is what it is. It was, it was 23% last year, which was down 2 points from 2018. And it did jump up in the second half. It jumped up 4 points. He had a 25% K rate in the second half. But, looking at Sierra indicators, he's got a really low walk rate. And so Sierra's going to like that at 6.1 walk rate. But, we talked about the K rate, but he's got a 42% ground ball rate. And that was actually a career high, but it was still 60th among qualified starting pitchers. So he's one of those, he gets drafted an SP, two. Or three, and I just see him more as a three best case, and really a four, and that's what he's given up for 3 years. And until something changes, I don't see reason to move him up. Spring training, there was some talk, the brief spring training, he had a little velo boost, and there was talk that maybe he had himself a new curveball. So maybe, I guess, but barring him pulling something out of his back pocket that we don't know about, I don't see where he's really going to change from what we've seen before.
I completely agree. He's a good pitcher. He's a really good pitcher. He's not an SP21, like you said. He's more of a 30, and he's going to get you good ratios. Not great. He's just not going to crush you most of the time. But for me, I think what people are seeing with him is he's an innings eater, 192 innings, 200 innings, projected to have 197 to 200, give or take. Like, he's going to eat innings up, which could be tremendous when you're looking for that, accumulating stats, and that's kind of what helps him out. Never a strikeout guy. I like to draft strikeout guys. That's just my thing. Everyone's different. If I'm not drafting a strikeout guy, it's like a Kyle Hendricks because he's drafted so much later than Jose Berríos. Stuff like that. I think you can call me crazy if you want. I'm not the biggest Miles Mikolas fan, but I could see Miles Mikolas, if he gets back to normal, being a similar to a Jose Berríos going a lot later in a draft.
Yeah.
So little things like that, which makes it just hard to pay for him.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you know, looking at his ADP, like he's, you know, he's going, he's going around Bauer, and I'm not a monster Bauer guy because I just don't know what Bauer I'm going to get from year to year, or whether he's going to throw a pitch over to center field, but he's going before Brandon Woodruff and, yep, and Frankie Montas
and Jesús Luzardo.
That's just crazy talk to me. Yep. Like I don't see the upside in it. Like you said, the innings are great. Like, he's going to give you a lot of innings of some pretty okay stats, but I think I have a good idea of what those stats are going to be. And I'd rather look elsewhere for that price.
All right. Last guy you had on here was Frankie Montas. We talked about him earlier. We've talked about him a few times because we're obviously big fans of Frankie Montas. I think it's pretty clear by now. We agree that splitter change was absolutely ridiculous, and that was a big, big factor to him taking the next step. I try to remind people that some of them might forget he was one of their top pitching prospects at one time, so it's not like a fluke that he was a good pitcher. He actually is good. But developing that pitch, we talk about it with the Paddocks and the Lucchesis and all these young guys that have good stuff. It's just like, find one more pitch. Just do that, and you're going to be ridiculous. Frankie Montas did that. So real quick, what do you have on him that makes you so excited?
Yeah, it's the splitty. It's like you said, he was a top prospect, but like the guys you mentioned before, the Padres, another Padre, Dinelson Lamet, he had high 90s heat, and he had a really good wipeout slider, and he had nothing else. And those guys eventually land up in the bullpen more likely than not. And that's kind of what we saw in his first 2 years, of limited action with the A's. It's just a lot you could see that guy's going to the bullpen, and he might be really good in the bullpen, but you usually can't get away with that limited a pitch mix, no matter if you're throwing 99-100. Like, you need something else. Like, you need something to give left-handers that move the other direction, and he didn't have that. And now that split, it's like, not only is the split finger nasty, but it just pairs so well with his fastballs and his slider. And like we were talking about, like, I can't imagine, look up some Pitching Ninja gifs on Frankie Montas overlays. He's got some of the 100 mile per hour heat and the slider, or the slider and the splitter. Slider and splitter are both coming at you, 88 miles per hour. They're going different directions, though, and they look like they're the same pitch at the decision point for the batters, and you just got to figure out which one is which. Mm-hmm. And that's very tough to do. Yeah, man. It's the we talk about pitch tunneling and whatnot. It's like, man, those, I used a couple of graphics in the piece, but it's easy for kind of anyone to see that why those pitches are so deceptive, and how little time a batter has, especially if he has 100 mile per hour heat. Like, if you're sitting on one of those breaking pitches and thinking, okay, I'm going to figure out if it's a slider or the split finger, and I'm going to nail it, and then he throws 99, like, good luck. You have no chance. And really, the biggest downside with Montas is the lack of a track record because of the PED suspension, which, like we mentioned, like, the PEDs didn't give him a split finger. So I'm not like worried that he's going to come back and he's not on the juice, and he's going to be much worse. My problem is that the split finger kind of goes in and out for some people. it's hard to always be on point with it from year
ask
to
Tanaka
year.
About that.
Yeah, Masahiro Tanaka is like the perfect example. When the split finger is working, he was unhittable. And, you know, he loses it and his production drops way off. So if we had had an entire year of Montes, like, you know, master of the split finger and it working all year, it'd be like his draft price this year would be ridiculous, for one thing. Yes. So that's like that's the knock against him. We only have 96 innings of him being this pitcher, but he plays for a pretty smart organization. And they like it's pretty obvious what the results are. Like, I have a feeling that's going to be a focus. Like, you know, he completely went from a ticketed to the bullpen to an elite starter, and everybody knows why. So I have to think they're going to be very focused on keeping him on that track. So yeah, I think this is the you know, even in a shortened season, if we get the same Montes that we got last year prior to the suspension, like, this is the last year to get him for cheap.
Yeah, I'm with you. He's going to climb up. He'll be in that Jack Flaherty Bieber price hike. I can see it coming a mile away. So yeah. I'm with you there. I'm going to have you on again in a week or two. We're going to talk your DH and we'll get your other work you're doing. We'll talk that up. But otherwise, I don't want to keep you all night, and I got a pregnant wife that's going to want to have dinner here pretty soon. So let's get to some listener questions, and we'll chat it up some more here in another week or two. But Rob DiPietro at Deadpool Hitter has a couple questions for us. First one, thoughts on fringe rotation, possible six starter types like Matt Andrees, Ross Stripling, and Corbin Burns?
Yeah, so I'm in on like this type of player in general, especially, you know, I was already doing a lot of bullpen building with my rosters pre-pandemic. Uh-huh. And, you know, now it's like you take Stripling, for example. Yeah, he's not a starter. He's, he's a fringe starter. That deal to the Angels was that got nixed was devastating. God, I love that. I got so excited when I saw that trade.
For everybody involved.
This is the year, finally, Ross Stripling, baby. But I know he's going to get used. Like, mm-hmm. I have no questions about his usage rate. He had 122 innings in 2018, 93 innings last year. 21 starts followed by 15 starts last year, 25% K rate. He plays for what is likely to be one of the best teams in baseball. And, you know, looking at the starting staff in front of him, it's Kershaw, Buehler, Price, Julio Urias, and Alex Wood. Would anyone bet that that's going to be the starting rotation for the entire year?
No. Big no.
I wouldn't. I mean, Alex Wood obviously is going to get hurt because that's what Alex Wood does. David Price, like, probably going to get hurt or miss some time. And, you know, even Kershaw, like, Buehler's the only lock that I have in that rotation. Mm-hmm. And so I think that Stripling's going to get his starts, and even when he's not getting his starts, he's going to get plenty of work. He's the fireman role. He's going to go, you kill with him. My home league is a points league, and we have a start limit per week, but we have specific relief pitcher slots. And man, I used to just crush people with Stripling, just moving him in and out and him picking up these like 2.2 inning wins with 4 or 5 Ks and it not counting against my start totals. Yeah, so I have a soft spot for Stripling. So yeah, I like guys that in this bizarro year of we don't know how usage is going to go for starters as much, but I'm more confident in like the more prime bullpen guys. Like, I think Stripling's going to get his innings.
Yeah, I don't hate it at all. I think it's something to be said about that. Our boy JB Branson from Roto Baller's got the Franken Ace strategy, which I think is genius. So some of these guys could have a big, big effect here, especially early on when guys aren't as ramped up, more six starters and stuff like that. There's a lot of possibilities there. So I definitely think we can keep an eye there. There's a handful of guys from each squad that we can definitely peek at for sure. The other question from Rob DiPietro, do you have any thoughts on Brian Abreu and if he is a candidate to start games for Houston? Thanks. I, for one, I'm not 100% sure on that because they're pretty loaded as it is. But do you have any thoughts on Brian Abreu?
Yeah, I was excited when he heard that he had a realistic, the coaches came out and said he had a realistic chance of competing for the fifth starter spot. But right now it's, the Astros are running out Verlander, Greinke, McCullers, Jose Urquidy, and Josh James is who Roster Resource has them starting right now. I have Abreu stashed on a couple of like deep dynasty teams, and I kind of thought my first value from him would be as a bullpen guy. So hearing that he might get a chance at starting is very exciting. But if he's not going to be a starter, I don't care for him as much, mostly because Ryan Pressly is the bullpen guy, non-closer that you want out of the Astros. And I'm not sure Abreu will get as many opportunities, but he has filthy stuff. He is a in the minors was a 30-40% K guy. He had hits like nine innings for the big club this year and had a 30% K rate. And more importantly, he finally dropped his walks down. He faced 32 batters last year. He only walked three to 13 Ks. It was 3.1 per nine. And then he came, in his limited time in spring training this year, he kind of did the same thing. The walk stayed at three per nine. So that's appealing. Like, I really like him for the long-term future. He's got, he sits 95. And he's got a devastating slider and curve that are both already above average and could both end up being plus. So, and he pitches for a very smart organization that I assume will develop him well. But his ADP is nothing. Like, it's throwaway. Like, if you want to stash him for a little bit just to see if he gets named a starter, then yeah. I can do that. And then if you can dump him if you need to be, if he ends up going into bullpen. But, he also has Lance McCullers as a starter on the Astros. And, yep. Going back to guys I'm not going to bet on pitching an entire year, he is definitely on that list.
Yeah, you got McCullers. And then as much as I like Urquidy's and James, I like them both value-wise and upside-wise. They're young. They could have hit a roadblock, give a little chance for Abreu. That's how Urquidy got chances last year and James has got chances before. So he might not be a guy to draft, but he might be more of a guy to get ready to pick up to see how that's going. So I could see that angle the way you talked about it there, most definitely. All right, that'll wrap us up for tonight's episode, Nick. Before we take off, remind everybody where they can find you and what you got coming up over at RotoBaller.
Yeah, so you can find me on Twitter at not Burt Reynolds. It's NT underscore Burt Reynolds. There's not a lot of us, I don't think. I do some predominantly dynasty work over at Pitcher List, and we're going to have, the dynasty team did a mock draft on, we each took for the amateur draft coming up. We each took like a handful of teams and drafted in their stead. So we'll have some stuff coming out on that. And for RotoBaller, I write a lot there. I have the Sierra pieces, like you mentioned, and the last Sierra, one in the Sierra series, will be coming out here in probably a day or so. And then on from there, I have a couple different things with looking at trying to, I separated out, kind of like we mentioned earlier, I separated out all the National League pitchers how they did against hitters and how they did against pitchers to look at the discrepancies. And then, but then I also kind of came up with my Franken like replacement, likely replacement player as my dogs freak out in the background. I plugged in some replacement stats and just to see how much their value would actually change. So I'm going to have some stuff coming out on that too.
Awesome. Looking forward to it. Like I said, we'll chat again here in a week or two, and we'll talk about the DHs and all that fun stuff. Cause I love sitting here talking to you. I love listening to you. You have a wealth of knowledge.
Thank
you. So no, I appreciate it. Thanks for joining me again tonight. I'm looking forward to doing it again in a few weeks.
Absolutely. It was a lot of fun. Thanks, Bubba.
All right, everybody. This was Bench with Bubba, episode 292 with Nicholas Gott of Rotoballer Pitcher List. And most importantly, he's not Burt Reynolds. We'll catch you guys later.
Hey, Drew Scott here.
And I'm Jonathan Scott, reminding you that life's better with a home policy from American Family Insurance. They can help you get just the right protection at just the right price and help you save when you bundle home and auto. Kind of like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. It'll be just right for you. We love a custom build. American Family Insurance. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.